Welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to all kinds of writers.
Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and this is a weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related topics. But before I get into this week's topic, I have an announcement to make that somewhat nullifies what I just said. I'm going to take a break after this week's episode. I decided about 2 months ago that I'm going to do NaNoWriMo for the first time this year. I haven't done much this past year in the way of fiction writing, and I decided it's time for me to make a commitment to focus on that for a bit and set some time aside to get a decent first draft down. What better time to do that than NaNoWriMo? So, that's my plan for the month of November, and I originally considered doing short podcast episodes each week, documenting my progress and maybe sharing realizations I was having about writing so much in such a short period of time, but I really enjoy taking the time to do, well, as thorough as I can manage anyway, research for each episode of this podcast, and writing up my notes and trying to polish it as best I can editing-wise. So, I don't want to half-ass a bunch of episodes. I absolutely love doing this podcast, and this is actually the first break I'll be taking since I started doing it a little over a year ago. So, I'll be back the first week of December. It'll be season 2, actually, which is a little hard to believe. Anyway, Halloween is in less than a week, which I'm excited about, even though I'm not doing anything in particular. I'm one of those people who kind of celebrates Halloween year-round. If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram already, you've probably seen some of the skulls and gargoyles that are all over my room all year round. And although I watch a lot of different kinds of movies, I'm just as likely to watch horror movies in April or July as I am in October. Same with horror novels. But all that stuff gets increased attention from the general public during the month of October. And since I love it all, you're not going to hear me complaining. So, I'm going to take a closer look at horror writing this week. But again, as I've said in previous episodes, this is a broad topic. There are a lot of different types of horror writing, and I could probably devote an entire season just to different horror writers and styles. But I see that as a good excuse to explore some aspect of this topic in more depth in a later episode. This week, I'm just going to focus on some of the basics. Maybe you've always wanted to write a horror story, but despite the popularity of the genre, hell, maybe due to it, you haven't been sure about how to get started. But fortunately, there are some exercises you can try and tips to keep in mind for writers who'd like to try their hand at horror. Hey, maybe you'd like to try writing a horror novel during NaNoWriMo next year. I mean, anything's possible, right? In an article that I'll include a link to in the show notes called 10 Tips for Writing Horror from the Masters of the Genre, Charlotte Allen advises that you, quote, read widely, unquote, if you hope to write horror. That makes sense, because if you're planning to write a horror story, you probably want to get the sense that your subject and characters will very likely scare people, right? I mean, you might find something terrifying, but no one else might. Or, you might have a particular fear that, as far as you know, no horror writer as of yet has thought to write about. But maybe if you get an idea of how your favorite writers build up suspense and find ways of making their characters haunt their readers' dreams, you might have a potentially groundbreaking novel on your hands. Not surprisingly, I've seen Stephen King also recommend that aspiring writers read as much as possible, although I have to admit, I don't remember where I've seen him say that. It might have been on writing, but I can't totally be sure. But perhaps that's why, after recommending reading a lot, Alan references King in describing the three main types of horror. And again, this is a broad overview. Obviously, you can and should, once you get the hang of the genre, build on these. But getting a sense of the larger category that your work might fall into should help you decide what you want and don't want to do when you're putting your story or novel together. According to King, as cited in Alan's article, the first main type of horror is what he calls the quote-unquote gross out. The first thing I think of here is gore, some recent examples of which could be seen in Lovecraft Country, the first season of which just ended on HBO. I'm going to defend my use of TV shows and movies rather than books for some of these examples here, because, hey, TV and movie scripts are forms of writing. But that said, I really loved the Lovecraft Country series, and now I really want to read the book. But anyway, there were a few scenes in the series that, I'll admit, I had difficulty watching because I've always been a bit squeamish when it comes to gore. I apologize in advance for any spoilers if you haven't seen the show. I'm going to try not to say too much. But there was an episode in which Letty's sister, Ruby, drank a potion and transformed into a white woman several times. And whenever she started to turn back, you saw all of the white skin falling off in huge chunks and lots of blood and other gory stuff. And I sat through it because I felt the point it was helping to make was a powerful one. But I can't say I could sit through that level of gore if I felt it was included simply for shock value. Another example is Walking Dead, which I stopped watching. I addressed this in a previous episode. I just stopped watching it about a season and a half ago. I can't explain why, and maybe one day I'll get back into it, but I'm not going to go into that again. But again, when I was a huge Walking Dead fan, I felt that most of the gore in that show was necessary to show what was happening in the world after the apocalypse and what the survivors were up against. Or if it wasn't necessary, it was at least appropriate. But some of it can be difficult for viewers who aren't accustomed to seeing that type of thing. And some have felt that the show served up too much gratuitous gore. An example is when Negan murdered Glenn and Abraham in the first episode of season 7. And you can find an abundance of criticism of those murders online. Obviously, in a novel, you're not going to be able to portray gore quite as graphically as you can on a screen. But you can still use language that describes, I don't know, someone's head being ripped off or their guts being eaten, or maybe both, in your writing. The second main type of horror that King describes in Alan's piece is something he calls, appropriately enough, quote-unquote, the horror. Going back to Lovecraft Country, there's another episode in which Atticus's cousin, Diana, has a curse put on her by an evil cop, and shortly thereafter, she starts being followed by these demonic girls who do weird dances, and only she can see them. The scenes where they're chasing her aren't gory like the one I just described involving Ruby. But few things I've seen in a horror movie or TV show have disturbed me as much as the first time Diana, and we, the viewers, see those girls moving up the steps of the train station. Again, I apologize if I've spoiled anything. Please go watch it. I'll move on to another example from the last few years. The film A Quiet Place, in which the characters need to tiptoe around and not speak to each other, because if they make the slightest sound, these creepy creatures fly at them within seconds and destroy them. To sum it up, I see this type of horror as something your characters need to avoid or escape from, but the possibility that they might be caught lurks behind every corner. And the third type of horror, according to King, is, quote-unquote, the terror. You might see this when what your character is familiar with is replaced with what looks like an exact substitute, but isn't. For this, I'll use one of King's most recent examples, the novel The Institute, as an example. In that novel, kids with telekinetic or telepathic abilities are taken from their homes in the middle of the night, and the people who take them kill their family members. The kids wake up the next morning in bedrooms that, at first glance, look a lot like the bedrooms in their homes several hundred or thousand miles away. But as they look around a little more, they realize that they're not exactly the same. There might be a poster missing here, a beloved toy might be out of place over there, and then when they step out into the hallway, they realize they're not in the home they grew up in. And they don't know where they are or what happened to their parents. You might be able to see why King considers this to be what he calls the worst type of horror. But I'm going to venture a guess that he means worst in the sense of most disturbing rather than most bad. Because this type of psychological horror can make for an absolutely compelling read. Personally, The Institute is in the top five of my favorite King books. So if you can pull off that type of horror well, send me the name of your book or story, because I definitely want to read it. Allen also stresses that an effective horror writer gets inside the narrator's head. Here she cites R.L. Stein, who said, quote, "I think you have to create a very close point of view. You have to be in the eyes of the narrator. Everything that happens, all the smells, all the sounds, then your reader starts to identify with that character. And that's what makes something really scary." End quote. I want to say here that I don't think you necessarily have to write in the first person to get inside your narrator's head. I mean, you can if you want. I just mean that if you think third person might be more effective, especially if you're writing a novel in the vein of another one of Stephen King's novels, The Stand, which has many, many characters, you can write in the third person, but still give the reader a strong sense of what each person is feeling and seeing and hearing. Allen also suggests that you draw upon your own experiences and fears in crafting horror fiction. This might require tapping into your own vulnerability. Maybe thinking about the monsters in your closet that scared the shit out of you when you were in grammar school, or going, quote-unquote, where the pain is, and thinking about a family member you lost at a young age. You might not feel comfortable doing this, but if you do, you may find that it not only makes your writing stronger, but it might actually help you cope better with feelings that might have bothered you for years. Maybe writing about the monsters, putting them out there for all the world to see, will make them less scary to you. An article from the Now Novel site, which I'm including a link to, called How to Write a Short Story, 6 Terrific Tips, written by a Jordan, suggests giving your scariest characters credible motivations. In other words, even though you're writing about something that's not happening in the so-called real world, doesn't mean you have to give your monstrous creations completely outlandish motivations that you feel your readers should accept because you think they should have vivid imaginations. Maybe you have a leader of a community who's a cold-blooded killer. Someone like, going back to Walking Dead, the governor, whom I hated, or the leader of Terminus, Gareth, whom I actually liked very much, in the first few seasons. Sure, they might be doing horrific things when we meet them, but maybe the reason they became that way is the members of that community were at each other's throats and stealing from each other before they happened upon the scene. Or maybe they were neglected or abused for years, But then the apocalypse happened, and they had an opportunity to remake themselves. Your readers don't have to like your horror villains, but you can make your piece richer by giving some insight as to where they're coming from and why maybe they do what they do. The Now Novel article also stresses that it's important for you as a writer to closely consider cause and effect, and how doing so will influence the choices your characters make. Do they put themselves in danger knowing full well that they might not make it out alive because they know that if they don't, they and their loved ones definitely won't survive? Or do they maybe do something really stupid because they have no idea that they might not make it out alive? We've all seen horror movies where we kept saying, or even shouting at the screen, "Don't go in there, you idiot!" And of course, the character we were addressing went in and got their guts ripped out or something like that. That's been done to death, if you'll forgive the expression. But what this article is getting at is, the choices your characters make do matter. And while we're on the topic of stuff that's been done to death, which apparently is the title of a play by Fred Carmichael, I learned that because naturally, when I thought of that phrase, I was like, done to death. That would make a great name for a horror story, wouldn't it? Well, someone beat me to that. But getting back to what I was saying, it makes a lot of sense that there are a lot of cliches in the horror genre. In the horror genre, On Writing Horror and Avoiding Cliches, Chris Fries acknowledges that cliches abound in horror, stating that, quote, creepy basements, loud noises from the attic, hidden rooms, Native American burial grounds, old hotels, multiple personality disorder, etc. It's all been done before, and it's all out there. These cliches shouldn't restrain you, however. They've simply defined the space you're working in. End quote. Fries goes on to say that many of the themes you're likely to find within the familiar horror framework are quote-unquote timeless, meaning that some phenomena that a lot of people found scary decades or maybe even centuries ago are still scary. A good example of this is clowns. Coulrophobia is the fear of clowns, and it's a very real fear. According to an article by Linda Rodriguez McRobbie called The History and Psychology of Clowns Being Scary, which isn't really about writing, but I'm just going to throw it in the show notes anyway because it's interesting, it was a thing long before serial killer John Wayne Gacy and Pennywise, the evil clown from Stephen King's novel It, were around. I can understand why millions of people from all walks of life around the globe have an intense fear of clowns. Even though, I'll admit, I'm not one of them. So even though King may have created the scariest clown in the history of fiction, that shouldn't automatically deter you from including a clown in your work if clowns are legitimately the creepiest characters you can think of and you can find a way of putting your own spin on it. That seems to be key for Fries, who advises, quote, finding your own voice, unquote. I think it can help to think of all of these familiar elements as the overall setting for the unique characters you want to create. Just don't use stock characters and settings because you think that's what sells when it comes to horror, especially if they don't scare you personally. Horror has always struck me as a genre that is not done well if the writer didn't have some type of personal investment in what they put on the page. Another way I believe you can find your own voice as a horror writer is to see parallels between horror and other genres. Going back to what I said earlier about reading widely, Fries emphasizes reading books outside the horror genre as well. Quote, in order to be aware what fiction is capable of, it's less a matter of importing techniques into the field than of seeing the field as part of a larger art, end quote. In another article called 25 Things You Should Know About Writing Horror, Chuck Wendig points out the close relationship horror has with humor. This rang especially true for me, because I'm also a huge fan of humor. Stephen King's use of humor is one of the things that most makes reading him so enjoyable for me. And it's also why an older HBO series, True Blood, is one of my all-time favorites. I suspect part of that may be that humor can help us deal with the scary stuff a little easier, even if it doesn't mean that we're safe when it rears its head. The opposite is often the case. But really, I didn't need to explain that. As Wendig states, quote, "Sometimes you don't know why you think this thing is funny or that thing is scary. They just are. It's why it's hard to explain a horror story or a joke. You can't explain it. You can only tell it." End quote. Here's a way to look at it. There are times when something scares you, and you don't have time to analyze why it scares you, because you need to get the hell to a safer place. Or you might start laughing uncontrollably before you have time to figure out what it was about or statement that set you off that was so damn funny. The ability to analyze our emotions is important in some situations, but in others, it might put our ability to survive in jeopardy. Also, it puts distance between you and your feelings, and I feel that can make it more difficult for you, as a horror writer, to get inside your narrator's head, as we discussed earlier. One more point I think is important, which the Charlotte Allen article discusses, is that horror is seen as a less, quote-unquote, legitimate genre than others. And it shouldn't be seen that way. This goes back to the distinction I've alluded to several times, and even addressed in my episode on escapist literature. Highbrow versus lowbrow. It's a bullshit distinction. If you're a horror writer who's writing every day and doing your research and writing about what's genuinely true for you, you're not a less legitimate writer than someone who won a Pulitzer Prize for a quote-unquote important literary work. Be proud of your work and take it seriously. Allen emphasizes here that owning what you write can help you distinguish criticism that might help you grow as a writer from criticism that serves little purpose because it comes from someone who doesn't particularly like the horror genre. Don't let someone who's not a horror fan make you feel you're a lesser writer just because you write horror. And that's my brief overview of horror writing. Again, I hope to address it in more detail in a future episode, and I hope you'll tell me what you think. I may be going on a break, but I'll still be looking at my email and posting on social media. So please, email me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at @marissad13, and find me on Instagram, marissadf13. And I'd really appreciate it if you can take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about this show. So I want to thank all of you for all of the support and feedback you've given me during this first year. It's really helped me. I mean, I've kept it all in mind in making this first season. I love doing this podcast, and I'm really looking forward to doing season two, and hopefully giving you more of what you want to write about and learn about and hear about. Please, stay safe during this month of November, and if you're doing NaNoWriMo as well, the best of luck to you. See you in December, and peace out. Oh yeah, and have a great Halloween.
This podcast has been brought to you by Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. Go to anchor.fm for more info.